The discovery of Göbekli Tepe in Anatolia, Turkey, has deemed it the oldest known megalithic site in the world by mainstream science. Since it was unearthed by Dr. Klaus Schmidt in 1996, Göbekli Tepe's circular temples have forever changed the way archaeologists look at the beginnings of civilization, and in more ways than one. In 1997, an expert on cereals, Professor Manfred Huhn at the Norwegian University of Life Sciences, started investigating an area close to Göbekli Tepe for evidence that would lead him to the first grains. His discovery of einkorn, an ancient single-grain wheat, took him 20 miles northwest to the mountain of Karadag, the same mountain Anton Parks was able to trace the Sumerian version of the Garden of Eden. Huhn believes this grain was the first cereal and older than any other grain known to man. The extensive lab results proved that the specimens of einkorn and emmer wheat dated back to 10,500 years ago. An article boasting his work stated, "Just as the dog evolved from the wolf and pigs evolved from boars, our cereals have been significantly altered by human civilization. But what if humans were altered by the cereals they ate as well?"
The area of Turkey called Anatolia plays a huge role in the human story. As far as we know, that's where the first indications of organized agriculture appear. And they appear around about 11,600 years ago. Why these things should have happened in Anatolia rather than somewhere else isn't really a question I can absolutely answer, except to say that perhaps the land was conducive to what needed to be done there. We're to envisage a group of hunter-gatherers who wake up one morning equipped with all the skills necessary to create what does turn out to be the largest megalithic site on Earth. Where did those skills develop? The only thing that archaeologists can do to explain this is kind of suggest that that must have been a specially gifted group of hunter-gatherers. They kind of gloss over the fact that we can't see any evidence of the evolution or development of these skills. Their only explanation can be that somehow a group of hunter-gatherers, even though we see no evidence of them practicing or learning how to do this, they must have woken up one morning just magically equipped with the ability to create this extraordinary, astronomically aligned, gigantic megalithic site. And just as an afterthought, they also invented agriculture at the same time. That, believe it or not, is what we are being taught about Göbekli Tepe now.
It is interesting to point out that not very far from the Karadag site that I located, we find the city of Göbekli Tepe. It is indeed intriguing. And also something else similar. In Sumerian texts, you can find an important character, the goddess Nisaba. She is the goddess of agriculture, of writing, and of wisdom. Nisaba, the goddess of rations and wheat. Indeed, she can also be called Demeter in Greek. In general, she is considered to be one of Enki's daughters.
Was there really a goddess of wheat and of agriculture? And if so, did this goddess teach the hunter-gatherers the skills of farming? Graham points out that this might be more evidence of what he calls an outreach program.
Now, how are we to take all of this, and how can we put it into some kind of context? For me, what I think we're looking at is more evidence that there was a high civilization that we have lost track of. We have forgotten a very important part of our story. And fragments of that story crop up all around the world. What I think we're looking at is an outreach program reaching out to the hunter-gatherers in what we would call the Upper Paleolithic, and beginning to teach certain of them selected skills, giving them the gifts of civilization. I think what happened in Anatolia was that the survivors of a lost civilization wiped out during the cataclysmic episode that immediately preceded 11,600 years ago, chose Anatolia as one of the places where they would settle and attempt to rebuild or recreate what had been lost.
We have evidence that there were advanced civilization, there was advanced civilization or civilizations, advanced sophisticated cultures that arose before the end of the last ice age. So we can think in round terms of about 10,000 BC. There was a natural catastrophe that occurred at 9700 BC, snapped us out of the ice age. And what I've determined and piecing the evidence together is that what caused it at 9700 BC was a major solar outburst. People can think of solar flares, but much larger than anything we've ever seen or experienced in modern times. What's known as coronal mass ejections. In some cases, what would have looked like huge lightning bolts literally hit the surface of the Earth, melted glaciers virtually instantaneously. This released pressure set off earthquake activity, set off volcanic activity. It actually, in the present day, we now know that volcanic and earthquake activity correlates with solar activity, even in the present day. But when you had a massive solar outburst like this, it would have been order of magnitudes larger.
Did these ancient people survive a cataclysm so great that they started to rebuild a new society near the most important ancient monument at the time? A society that required a new kind of food.
The earliest evidence we have of cultivated grain is in southern Turkey near the Syrian border. Now, there were grains before that, but this is the cultivation of grains, which means it's a slightly different kind of grain, or something evolved or changed, something new about the grain that allowed it to be planted, that allowed people to settle and not be nomads. So civilization is to be dated from that one development, that one event. It's all about grain.
Is it possible that the agricultural revolution began near Göbekli Tepe because humans wanted to stay near the site? And to do so, they needed to feed the people that migrated to this ancient spot after a cataclysm. Could the old ways of gathering of wild wheat to eat have not been enough for such a population in one area? But how then could the cultivation of an intense amount of crops begin? Billy Carson suggests that there might have been an intervention.
There was a great cataclysm that pretty much separated humanity, and the pre-Adamites were leading humanity at that time. Most of the pre-Adamites died in the cataclysm. The ones who did not die were spread out across the earth, and they began to reestablish civilizations and to bring humanity together so they can teach them animal husbandry and how to grow crops. Not just the grains, but a lot of corn, a lot of the different things that we harvest were genetically engineered by the non-terrestrial groups. They were brought here from another planet and genetically spliced with native plants. The reason we know this is that when you look back at the historical record, looking at fossils, you don't see these genetically engineered wheats or grasses. You only see the wild grasses. These crops seem to appear here out of the blue on the historical record. And the historians have located ancient grains in Anatolia, Turkey. So what are the chances that these grains are going to have their birthplace in the same place that humanity did?
Could the ancients have genetically altered the grasses of Earth? And if so, how did that modify the human DNA?
Food, as it pertains to our DNA structure, can literally be traced back to what we would call an interaction with what some people call the Anunnaki, with this non-human intelligence. Now, there was a goddess, and she was apparently a geneticist. When you read these ancient Sumerian tablets. And it's at this time of interaction that pretty much every cereal grain appears on the earth. Before that, we just had nothing. We can't trace them past a certain point. And what's interesting is it's at this stage that ancient civilization just explodes. As soon as these cereal grains begin to appear, all of these ancient civilizations begin to appear. At first, there was nothing. Then all of a sudden we have civilization after civilization that have mathematics, culture, they're building monuments, they're performing agricultural feats. I believe that all of that can be equated to the introduction of these cereal grains into our DNA because she was actually affecting human DNA at that time through a number of different experiments. And a lot of this might be where the Babylonian bloodlines are originated from.
Could the bloodlines, or elite, have been created as a result of the cultivation of wheat? If this is true, Is it possible that this was the first hierarchy created within the human population between those that cultivate the land and those who benefit from it? If humans could not roam anymore for their food in the wild as they had done as hunter-gatherers, then did these humans fall into a system that would make them dependent on the cultivation of food to survive? Could evidence lead us back to the Garden of Eden?
We seem to trace everything back to this Garden of Eden as the cradle of civilization. And it appears that it is not the cradle of civilization, it is the cradle of re-civilization. A civilization prior had fallen, and afterwards, after a cataclysm, they had to rebuild, and that is where they began.
But the idea of the Garden of Eden essentially is a metaphor for bringing and restoring order to the face of the earth. Now, that works on one level. On the other level, you can also establish a physical Garden of Eden where you have animal husbandry, you have the growth of cereal crop, structures which are now coherent. So all of these things are built up into a kind of an orderly environment, which by its nature, by people actually interacting with this orderly environment, they themselves rise from a state of barbarism into a state of order and perfection. And the people that kind of came up with this concept appear to have been people who are human or human-like, but somehow different. And they often are described as being very tall. They certainly knew about how to domesticate cattle and crops. So they obviously came from some kind of a godly caste. And but back then, you have to understand that gods were not necessarily people. Gods were forces of nature. But they were people who also personified those forces of nature. So they had the understanding, they had the processes of ancient knowledge, which goes back thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, and they tried to impose that on the actual land to bring humanity back into a state of order from this terrible catastrophe. They understood how nature works, the dynamics of the systems of the universe, so they became as gods, and this is where we get that sort of overlap of thinking that these people were themselves gods. They were actually godlike.
Could these godlike beings be the characters in the Sumerian text? Is it possible that these beings could be the elite the ancient texts talk about that bring cultivation to the human race? According to Jack Carey's research, a battle for humanity takes place between these gods, and the seeds are the only thing that will help the human population continue.
A lot of occult adepts will tell you that at some point it looks as though a massive falling out had taken place between the leadership of this extraterrestrial intelligence and Enki and Enlil, and you get into that whole family squabble. They discovered that the leadership wanted to wipe out humanity, the source of the Great Flood and a lot of cultures. And Enki and are just mortified, horrified that they're going to destroy their invention, this beautiful creature that they had created, just completely wipe it out.
C'est Ninma, la fameuse reine Ninma.
Ninma is considered a queen who is going to enforce her law on Caradog, who's going to be in charge of the colony and will oversee the whole Inuna's installation and survival process on the Eden Mountain. You have to know that Ninma is a central figure in this story. She is a queen from the beginning until the end. She will remain queen, one of Tiamat's daughters. She is Enlil's wife at first, but much later in the story, she gets closer to Enki, and we realize that at some point, she married him, and that she's had a change of heart. She has changed clan for the betterment of the Earth's agriculture and life in general.
Before the deluge, Ninma made a bank of seeds on the genome, and she had a bank of the genome of animals. And she gave that to Zeusudra to put on his submersible. So they were the first seed. It was like a museum. It was all kind of different seeds of wheat, of grains, and it had been a house with boxes with the seeds very neatly sorted out, and it was an immensely old. It seems like after the deluge, they started to plant again those seeds in the mountains, in the Zagros Mountains, that were the first one to be free from the water and mud.
The Neolithic Revolution, which was when humans started domesticating plants and animals and started building these big constructions was one of the most important turning points in human history. Before that, humans were hunter-gatherers. The only reason why you and I are not out there hunting mastodons right now was because of that domestication process that started back then, right around the Göbekli Tepe area. That changed everything for us. Now, according to the Mesopotamian texts, some say, well, the gods were really only doing it for themselves. They really weren't out there to help humans. But of course, it had a huge beneficial effect for us.
Could this beneficial fact of domestication have been an idea given to us by the Sumerian gods? And was it a benefit at all? Could the agricultural revolution just be another way to enslave the human race? Is it possible that a civilization based on the cultivation of plants in one area enslave us to that area? Billy Carson has some interesting information on this idea.
According to my research, the Anunnaki came from a different barometric pressure, a different gravitational field. So working on this planet was difficult for them. So they decided to genetically engineer the beings that were already here with their own genetics. They wanted someone to help them till the Earth, so they genetically engineered human beings to basically be their gardeners. Human beings were genetically spliced all over the planet during this time period. As a matter of fact, they brought from their home planet grains that they would consume. They then spliced them with grasses here on Earth to create a grain that they could have human beings then harvest for them.
Andrew Collins points out that once the humans left the area of Göbekli Tepe, they spread out all over the world with the same system of civilization.
After the closure of Göbekli Tepe, and these settlements began to spread outwards like waves and created what's known as the Neolithic Revolution, taking with them new ideas in agriculture, animal domestication, metallurgy, the production of alcohol in the form of wine and beer, stone tool technologies. These ideas gradually moved southwards as well as westwards, eastwards and presumably northwards as well, and end up going through the area of the Levant, which today is the countries of Palestine and Israel, and reach Egypt as early as 8,000-8,500 BC. And that here, within sight of the Great Pyramid, or where it would later be built, a settlement arose. And that amongst these were highly sophisticated stone tool technologies, which are found identical at Göbekli Tepe.
In Göbekli Tepe and the surrounding regions, we find the sudden emergence of what can only be called civilization. If the Sumerian gods or elite did recreate a new human race that depended on agriculture, where can we see evidence of this same process around us today? Biotech corporations today are genetically altering seeds. It involves altering the genetic makeup of a crop in some way, typically for the purpose of making that crop perform better. DNA is extracted from animals, viruses, bacteria, insects, and even humans, and then inserted into the DNA of the crop. This is referred to as GMOs. It has been stated that GMOs will help solve world hunger by providing crops that can grow in harsh climates. However, some scientists have been able to link these GMO seeds to obesity, diabetes, asthma, fertility problems, food allergies, and even cancer. All of these conditions change our DNA. Are we becoming an even different form of human today with these new foods?
If we look at the mystery in the vacuum, all we can do is speculate. But when we look within the broader context, we already know that human DNA was fused in a way that cannot be explained through evolution. It happened 200,000 years ago, precisely the time that the Sumerian traditions tell us that the kingship from the heavens arrived on Earth. Now, as a scientist, I can't say that one is because of another. But what I can say as a scientist is that there's a very high correlation. between the time that the records show that something very unique happened in the Tigris-Euphrates, in Turkey, in this part of the world, and the physical evidence that we're seeing right now in terms of technology. Anatolia in Turkey, for example, is a region where the DNA studies of the grain that has been uncovered now are showing us it's the first place that modern cereals that we take for granted today appeared from native grasses that had been grown there in the past. And the question is, why did this happen? Is this a spontaneous emergence of the cereals, or, as we're doing today, were those grasses somehow genetically modified? As strange as it sounds to some people, the idea that we may have had the ability to genetically engineer not only our bodies, but our food in the past, or maybe the other way around, not only our food, but our bodies in the past, I think is gaining credibility among scientists who are willing to honestly look at the evidence that's being presented.
Sean Stone suggests that the DNA these ancient grains originated from may have, in fact, come from another world.
Panspermia is essentially the notion of bacteria and other living organisms spreading to other planets from comets and other space debris, essentially. We know for a fact that panspermia exists, and so the idea of if bacteria and other living organisms can make it to Earth from other planets, then certainly grains and other foods could have been brought here. Panspermia concept is a random act. This is potentially a deliberate one. But we know, given our history, that since we are altering the genetic makeup of foods, we're obviously starting to play God by tampering with the entire genomic structure of not only plants, but actually humans, then certainly it's feasible that some type of alien beings did essentially alter grains in order for human civilization to begin.
Not only were there genetic differences from another planet in the grasses, but the actual consuming of these cereals caused human beings to begin to change environmentally. Our teeth began to change, our bone structures began to change, and it was because we were able to get nutrition on a regular basis instead of being foragers.
As far as the issue of tampering with genetics, and not only in foods, but also in humans, we're actually seeing something very interesting now. The idea of actually creating DNA vaccines. Scientists are already coming up with the plan to use things like Zika as a basis for putting human DNA into a vaccine and then injecting people with that DNA. So the DNA would essentially give orders and instructions to your body to combat the Zika virus. But the problem is it creates all types of consequences that have not really been discussed or debated properly, which is to say, if the DNA is absorbed into your system, how will it alter your entire DNA structure? How will it pass on to your future generations? So these are the really interesting questions that are being raised now because we've become more and more familiar with the nature of the genomic structure of humans and the possibility of tailoring future generations to the will of science. But we don't necessarily understand all the consequence of what that will entail because it doesn't just end with you, it ends with your children and their children and their children's children.
Perhaps these issues bring up another concept, which is, if our DNA is being altered by the food we eat, and this can be traced back to an ancient agricultural revolution that created elite versus the worker, could this mean that our societal structure is based on enslavement to cultivation? Is it possible our ancient ancestors became a different kind of human once we agreed to be part of this system? Could this explain the ancient struggle for power over the masses by Sumerian gods such as Enki and Enlil? And where might we find more evidence of these alternative forces all over the globe?
I think in the past, female cultures have been given a bad press. We know about kingship. We know about great battles fought by men. And we know that whole civilization seems to be focused around patriarchal societies. But clearly that was not the case in prehistoric times. It would seem as if the female had a much stronger role in society.
Up next, the mysterious disappearing woman within civilizations. Is this the link to a much older culture that resided here on Earth?